This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, happy Wednesday, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Wendy Yang from Sarasota, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for August 7th. This is episode 718. This episode is brought to you by Back on Track Products. Good morning, Horse World.
Morning. Today is Wednesday.
Hey, everyone. Happy Hump Day.
Happy Hump Day, baby. Here's to another week. Halfway done. Downhill stretchers finally begun.
Daddy, I want another pony.
What do they call Wednesday hump day anyhow? Innocuous jibber jabber.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to Horses in the Morning. We really appreciate you being here. And Wendy, thank you for stopping by on a Wednesday. Is this your first time doing the Wheel of Trivia?
It is, yes. My first Wednesday.
Your first Pat Sajak impersonation time?
Yep, I've called in before, and I failed miserably on my question, but I'm ready to redeem myself.
Now you get now you
now
can't
I have
win
all
anything.
The answers.
That's right. You're not winning today. You're giving prizes away. So
yeah, that's more fun.
Hey, Wendy, you know, all of us have horses, have lived at one time or another in an old farmhouse, and there's certain things about old farmhouses that happen to all of us. Well, this morning was one of those mornings living in an old farmhouse. I wake up, you know, I get up pretty early, so it was like 4:35 o'clock, and I come out of the bedroom, and I am greeted to a very ill cat who had decided to be sick all over the house, and
an infestation
of the big black ants. And you know, living in an old farmhouse, that for some reason, over the summer, at least once, you get these big black ants that decide to invade your house. I don't know if the memo goes out, they send emails out, what it is, but they decide to come in. And there were literally some in every room of the house.
I know.
But you've had that, I'm sure. Everybody does with the ant thing if you live on a farm at least once a year.
I'm having an ant problem right now.
Are you? Same thing?
I don't have the big black ones, but I have the little ant colony out in my pool area that I have to attack.
Yeah. I'll tell you, it was an interesting morning to say the least. So now the cat is locked in the spare bathroom, because where do you put him when he's deciding to be sick? So what I think he did is there was evidence of some half-eaten ants all over the house. So I think the cat went on an ant-eating spree, and that is why he got sick. So now he's locked in the spare bathroom. Well, you know how cats are about being locked up in a tiny little room. They don't like it much, especially the beast.
Especially yours.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So I have two doors between me and the cat to just keep the volume level down of the screaming that is going on, that sounds like a baby being tortured with a hot iron in our bathroom.
And it's his little arm out underneath the bottom of the
and
door.
And it can just fit. It just fits from underneath the door, actually. So you see his
That's
little arm.
That's my favorite thing that cats do.
He is not happy at all. Now, he ate his breakfast with a little bit of medicine in it just fine this morning, so he's not going to die, probably. But let me tell you, I don't think big black ants are good for little cats when they eat them all night long like candy.
No.
It's not good.
Maybe if they were chocolate covered, it'd have been better.
But
straight up, fresh, uncooked, a bad idea. Yeah.
So I had to get out at 5 o'clock this morning. I had the bug. You know, we have to spray our house once a month for bugs anyway. So you live in Florida, you do that. So I had the bug spray. I had to go dig it out. Got the bug spray. Sprayed it at the edges of the outsides and the insides of the house for bug spray with the bug spray.
Yeah.
And doing that at 5 o'clock. While trying to avoid all of the cat problems that we were having. So it was fun. Fun having those both at the same time. I'm hoping for a better morning here on the show with you. I'm hoping for a better day.
It can only get better at this point now. So I feel like much more relieved. The pressure's gone.
There we go. And of course, for those that don't know, if you're a new listener to the show, Wendy is a regular host over at the Driving Radio Show. And we're glad to have her. She's a veterinarian and has offered me no advice about what to do with our sick cat. But that's okay, Wendy. We understand you do horses. So
there's only one thing you need to do with cats when they get sick is you give them wet food.
That's what we did.
And you put them in some place, like the bathroom, and then you wait.
You wait.
and then amazingly get better. They're cats.
And then you send your wife in to clean it up after. That's the other thing you forgot on that list. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, Jennifer, what's coming up in today's show?
Wait it out.
You have a bunch of callers to get to.
I think I need to go for a really long trail run today, Glenn.
I really do.
But before I do, on today's Back on Track Wednesday edition, following the customary hump day trivia hilarity, we skip across the pond for the equally customary headline hashing with Victoria from Horse and Country TV. And once our intrepid co-hosts have covered the best of the best, you can't make this stuff horsey headlines, thehorse.com slides smoothly over the hump of hump day with the tree ties on feral ponies.
Very good.
That's your cue, Glenn.
Thank you, Jennifer. And I do want to mention to everybody who might be expecting it, Jennifer started something on the internet yesterday that kind of went crazy. And we'll talk about that this morning at the end, toward the end of the show after the horse.com segment. Jennifer will be talking about Budweiser and the distributor down there in the South who decided to support the Tennessee Walker show. So we will discuss that a little bit later on in the show, and Jennifer will review with us what the facts are. We'll go over the facts, and there's some people that have blown it all out of proportion, you know, that the Budweisers are going to be soared and, you know, be competing in high-stepping classes. That's not true. But we will go over the facts and details later on in the show now that Jennifer started it. That post she put up yesterday had a ton of shares and views. I mean, it just went crazy. So we will go over that later on. But first, it's time for Daily Winnies. I have two of them today. And by the way, we might have a line or two open if you want to give us a call. It's 347-637-3238 to play the equitymfg.com Wheel of Trivia. My first Daily Winnie goes out to my good friend Helena, host of the Stable Scoop radio show. Wendy, do you realize tomorrow, August the 8th, 5 years ago in 2008, was when we posted the first Stable Scoop show?
Oh, congratulations.
Yep, it was 5 years
That's
ago.
Incredible.
Yeah, 5 years ago we posted the first one. It's really bad. I went back and listened to a little bit. It's like, do I want to play a little of this on the Stable Scoop show this week? And I was like, oh, no, that's really terrible. So, we've come a long way. We have over 3,000 episodes now that we've put out on the Horse Radio Network since then in the last 5 years. And when we started this, we really were going to just do it for fun for a little while and quit. And you could see what happened with that. So that's great.
I think back to 5 years ago, the technology must have changed so much then too for the recording and producing the show.
Yeah, nobody could, one, figure out how to listen to our show. We couldn't find a player that actually worked on the website. I mean, you're right. Technology has come a long way. Now we have the app and people can listen there. You know, it's just gotten so much better technology-wise now. It's so much just easier for us. It's just easier for you to listen and easier for us to actually put the show out. So both ways. And you know what? I kind of think we deserve this for that anniversary. So there you go. That was to ourselves. My second Daily Winnie today. My second Daily Winnie today goes out to a very special person that Wendy and I met on the Driving Radio show this week. We call her Mini Sarah because, one, she has a mini, and two, she is mini. What'd she say? She is like 4 foot. 4'7"
Yeah.
Something that would make Wendy look tall. But she actually, we had her on the show, and she, Sarah's been a dialysis patient for a very, very long time, and she's on the kidney transplant list, and she's been waiting, and yet, you know, with everything she's went through, she told me yesterday, and I don't know if I'm supposed to say this, sorry, Sarah, if I'm not, but she told me yesterday that she's, you know, going for her 100th surgery tomorrow. She's 27 years old. You know, think about that. Yet she's one of the most positive, upbeat people we've met on the show. Wouldn't you say, Wendy? I mean, yeah. She just was delightful to talk to. And she wrote me something yesterday that probably was one of the nicest things that's ever been said. It makes that whole past 5 years of doing these 3,000 episodes worth it. And what she said was, she said, the beautiful part of your podcast is that I have been downloading them to listen to during my treatments, and I just downloaded some of your older ones to listen to before and after surgery. You would be surprised how time flies in those stressful situations when I get to listen to the show. She goes for a dialysis all the time. I don't know how many times a week, but a lot. Mm-hmm. And they're 3 hours at a time. So,
oh my God.
Yeah. So, Minnie Sarah, thank you so much for what you wrote, you know, yesterday about that. It was one of the most heartfelt and it was one of the comments about our shows that affected me the most. And I'm glad we can help people kill time. That's what we're here for. But especially in stressful situations like she's going through now. We wish her the best of luck in her surgery tomorrow. And we wish that she would get to the top of that list for an organ transplant and have to stop doing all of this. So, and if you want to hear more about Minnie Sarah and her blind little mini pony Taz, who she drives and does great things with, it's amazing. You can go over to the Driving Radio Show. It's up right now at drivingradioshow.com. Let's get to the Wheel of Trivia, brought to you by EquityMFG.com.
It's time for the EquityMFG.com Wheel of Trivia, where every week, unsuspecting horse enthusiasts call the show with illusions of trivia grandmaster dancing in their heads, willing to risk all for their chance to spin the wheel and possibly win some fantastic prize. Or answer incorrectly and have torn away every ounce of equestrian street cred they have, like an old bell boot.
I don't know why I chuckle at that every time I hear it. But there is time for the EquityMFG.com Wheel of Trivia. This is how it works. We will ask you one trivia question from a bunch of categories. You'll get to pick your category. Wendy, you'll go over those in a minute. You'll get to pick your category. We'll ask you the question. If you get it correct, you will hear the bell. If you get it incorrect, you will hear the high school basketball buzzer. Ooh, that's loud. Let's turn that down. So once you do that, if you get it correct, we will spin the wheel. We have 14 terrific prizes on here and one really crappy one. And the crappy one this week that you hope you don't win is a box of crap, actually. I'm going to clean out my closet of all this crap that companies have been sending to us. We're going to throw it in a box. There's some nice stuff in there, actually. I'm going to throw it in a box, and we're going to send it out to you. So it's kind of a mystery box of crap. But it's a good way for me to clean out my closet. So that's what the crappy prize is. We have great prizes on here. We have Briar. We have carrots, carrots products. We have, let me think, we have some new ones too. We have gift certificates from stores. We have some new products from Noble Equine. Omega Alpha has products on here. So there's a bunch of great stuff. And we'll be hopefully giving a lot of it away today. Wendy, what are the categories?
Okay, our categories are not so vital statistics, 20th century history, myths, legends, and folklore. And as always, we have a kids category.
Very good. Well, we got some new callers on here that have lined up. Let's take Joanne in New Mexico. Is that right, Joanne?
Yes.
Well, thank you for calling and welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Do you have horses?
Yes, I do. I drive.
Oh, you drive? You're one of our drivers. Do you listen to the Driving Radio Show? Shake your head up and down.
Yes, I do.
What kind of horse do you drive?
Morgan.
Oh, great.
Oh, great. And what kind of, do you compete them or trail drive or?
No, I just trail drive. Out here, we have a lot of open space.
Yeah, you sure do.
Oh, that's great.
Along with the snakes and the scorpions.
No.
Okay. Just checking.
Not really.
It is a beautiful country to drive in, though, isn't it?
Yes, it is. When it's not so hot, you can't stand it.
Yeah, that's true. You have had a hot this year.
Yeah.
Well, let's find out which category. You want to go over them again, Wendy?
So you have Not So Vital Statistics, 20th Century History, or Myths, Legends, and Folklore.
Let's just try the myths, legends, and folklore.
Okay. Here's the question. If these parts of a horse are all white, folklore advises you to give him away, do without him, or even feed him to the crows. And your choices for the answers are hooves, socks, or feet.
Socks.
Right. Correct.
You got it. Actually, it was all. Actually, it was all three. See, I told you, Jennifer, we'd screw that question up, and we did.
Oh.
Sorry, you actually read the answer to her.
Oh. Hey, Wendy. I'm an help. Yes. Helpful hint that I maybe should have given you before the show. If there's an A, B, and C, that makes it multiple choice. If there's just commas. Not so much. Okay, sorry.
But that's okay.
I thought they were all multiple choice.
She's a new caller and a driver, so she wins. We'll give her a prize.
That's funny. Spin that wheel, dude. Spin that wheel.
Here we go. Let's see if she's going to go buy the box of crap or not. Oh, you win. Actually, this is a really good prize. It's an $80 value. You win Omega Alpha Biotic 8. And that's, it's actually, I think it's a month's worth. And this is a terrific product. We use it on our horses here. And what it is Equine Biotic 8 is the most broad-spectrum prebiotic and probiotic digestive tract formula to promote better intestinal health for all stages of life. Guaranteed, it's approved for Morgan's too. So we're going to send you a bucket of that out. And as I said, that's an $80 value. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Getting the easiest question we're going to give today because we also gave you the answer. So, Joanne, hold on.
Hey, I told you I would screw this up.
We love you, Wendy. That's why we love you. Hold on, Joanne. Jennifer will get your information.
All right.
It's funny. It's okay, Wendy. It's your first time. We'll forgive you. Hey, look who called
I know,
in.
No, but every time I do this wheel.
Hey, I'm looking at the list of people who have called in, and it's Minnie Sarah has called in, who I just gave the Daily Winnie to. Hey, Minnie Sarah.
Hello, Glenn. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for calling. This is a surprise. I'm glad you did.
I'm glad I did, too.
So
how are you feeling?
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm actually at dialysis right now, so if you hear a bunch of beeping, it's just the machines crying. It's okay.
How often do you have to go, and how long do you go for?
I go 3 days a week for 3 hours for the last 14 years.
Ooh, you do need something to kill time while you're at dialysis, don't you?
No kidding, and this is the best way to do it.
Well, what you wrote yesterday, I gave you my Daily Winnie today for a reason, is it really was special to me that we can help people like that, you know, so I appreciated that. Thank you, Sarah.
Well, I do have to tell you, I'm not the only one. I've actually kind of spread the word, and there's about 5 different dialysis patients that are now listening. That's a good way to kill time.
We love that. Horses in the Morning live at the Dialysis Center.
Right.
That beats listening to Don Imus or somebody like that, you know?
Oh, my God.
We're better than Howard Stern, right? So
that's right.
Yes.
Any day of the week.
Well, now we know you have minis. We know what you have. And we know you drive, and you drive your little blind mini Taz, which is really cool.
That's right.
Jennifer was watching the videos yesterday and going, how does she do that? How does the mini not crash into the thing? I said, well, I guess
that's a good question. I'm not really sure either.
Well, all right, let's ask you a question. What category would you like?
Oh, goodness.
Okay. You want me to read you the categories again?
You know what? Go ahead and pick for me, Wendy.
Well, you know, how tall are you again?
Oh, I am 4'7".
Oh, let's give her a kid's question because she's not any taller than
that. That's what I thought. I meet the height requirement.
That's right.
Okay. Okay, here's your question. Name the famous thoroughbred racehorse who just had a Disney movie made about his life and that of his owner, Penny Chenery.
Oh, I know this one. I feel really smart right now. Secretariat.
Yes.
Very good. Yes, you did get that one. Very good.
Congratulations.
All right. You know, can you even get on the rides at Disney World?
No.
Oh, my God.
Thought that teacups is the only thing I could do.
Oh, that sucks. All right.
But I have a mini, so that's like a ride every time anyways.
That's true.
Oh, that does suck. All right, let's spin the wheel for you. See what you want.
Okay.
I'm glad you get to win. Well, you missed the box of crap. Just went by.
Woo!
That's out of there.
Good.
Oh, you won something really, really good, actually. It's a brand new one here today on the wheel. It's a $25 gift certificate from Equus Now. And I don't know if you got to listen to the show yesterday, but we had our first special Tack Talk episode where Rose from Equus Now came on and spent the whole hour and a half with us, and we talked products and tack. So you get to pick anything you want from their great store, $25 gift certificate. You'll have fun with that. You'll be able to find something for you in the minis.
Oh, I'm sure I will.
Well, thank you so much, Minnie Sarah, for calling. We appreciate it. And as I said earlier, we wish you the best of luck tomorrow with the surgery, and we wish you to go to the top of the list.
Well, thank you so much, and I will be sure to keep you guys informed and call in and let you know how things go.
You do that. Thanks, Minnie Sarah. Hold on, Jennifer.
Thank
I'll get your address. All right, Jennifer, you can go ahead and take Minnie Sarah's address. She won the $25 gift certificate. And we have more new callers here. Let's see here. We have a new caller, Autumn in Georgia. Good morning, Autumn.
Good morning.
How are you?
Hi, Autumn.
Hi.
So you sound young, Autumn. How old are you?
I'm 17.
Oh, you're not that young. Okay. You sound much younger than you are. I don't know if
I'm just little and I have a little voice.
Well, wait a minute. Our last guest was 4'7". Do you got her beat?
No, luckily I'm taller than that. But my best friend is about that height. So.
Oh, really? She can't get on the rides at Disney World either. Do you have horses?
It's okay. I don't think I want to.
Do you have horses, Autumn?
Yes, I do. I have horses.
And what do you do with them?
Just some natural horsemanship, and I love to trail ride them.
Oh, do you? So you trail ride too?
Yeah.
Cool. And what kind of horses? Quarter horses or paints?
One quarter horse, and the rest are all Tennessee walking horses.
Oh, really? Wow, great. I learned to ride on a Tennessee walking horse, actually. My first horse. Was a Tennessee
walker.
They're
very smooth rides.
Yeah, and everything after that was bumpy, and I couldn't figure out why. So what category would you like? You don't get the kids' questions. You're too old and too tall.
Okay, aww. How about not-so-vital statistics?
Okay, not-so-vital statistics. The question is, how many, and this is a multiple choice, okay? How many cubic yards of manure does an average horse produce annually? About 14, about 40, or about 200?
Oh, wow.
No, that's a hard one.
How much manure does a horse make annually? 14 cubic yards, 40, or 200 cubic yards?
And I think like a dump truck is like one, maybe it's 5 cubic yards or something, right?
I don't remember.
A dump truck?
Do you have a guess for us?
I'm going to say 40.
Oh.
40? Oh, sorry.
Close, though.
It's 14.
What is that you learn in school about multiple choice questions? There's something you learn in school about taking multiple choice questions and when you guess. And you did, I think you did the right thing. You went right in the middle. So that was a good guess.
I thought it was 200.
I did too. It seems like my pony poops that much.
That's a draft horse. That's a draft horse.
It feels like mine are producing 200.
They seem to go to the bathroom quite a lot.
Well, you know, and Autumn has five of them. She's got about 8,000 cubic yards a year of poop.
Yeah.
Thank you, Autumn, for calling. You can call again, okay?
Yes, thank you.
All right.
Thanks.
And our next caller is another new caller, Tony from, I think, Illinois. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
All right. How are you doing?
Oh, it's our Tony from the Driving Radio Show. It's Tony Troyer.
Hey,
Hi, Tony.
Tony.
How you guys doing today?
She recognized your voice, Tony. That tells you something.
Well, you know, I mean, we're crazy people that drive horses and do weird things, you know?
Yeah, we're bonded.
Yep.
And we've been to Hooters together even, Glenn. Come on.
There you go. That that makes you bonded for sure.
Yeah.
Well, Tony, thank you for calling into play. We really appreciate it. Now, Tony, you've got an Arab or you have several horses, don't you?
I got a whole bunch of Arabs, yeah.
That's what I thought.
I also got two spotted saddle horses also.
Wow. Are they smooth, too?
Yeah, a lot slower than I usually like to go, but they're smooth, yeah.
Tony's a man after speed, Wendy.
I just got done. I was driving the spotted saddle horse that Mary Ruth Marks started for me, and let me tell you, third time out this year, took him right into town and didn't do a thing. So,
that's great.
Ain't that cool? So what are we doing?
Do you drive through your drive-through in town? Like go to the McDonald's drive-through in town?
No. I don't quite do that. I mean, usually if I'm driving to town, it's usually on business and I want to get it done.
I want a picture though of you going through the McDonald's drive-through in town next time you go in.
All right.
I want a picture.
I'll get that for you.
We love those pictures when people send those to us. We've had people ride through. I don't think we've had any drive-thrus yet. You'd be the first.
So. Okay.
Tony, you pick a category.
What are my categories? This is my first time calling.
All right. Your categories are not so vital statistics, 20th century history, or myths, legends, and folklore.
Myth, legends, and folklore.
Okay. All right. According to popular myth, how does the sculptor indicate whether the mounted officer in his work died in battle?
Say that one more time for me.
Okay, according to popular myth, how does the sculptor indicate whether the mounted officer in his work died in battle? So in the sculptures of the mounted officers, they have a way of indicating that the people died in battle or did not.
They like leave a sword in him.
I didn't know this one either, Tony.
Or do they leave a hole? I mean, you know,
the bullet hole in the forehead. That's pretty good.
His eyes.
Okay, a little more serious. His eyes are shut.
I like the bullet hole.
The answer is it's the number of hooves of the horse touching the ground.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. There's a rule. If there's two, what is it, Jennifer? If there's two touching the ground, I don't know which way it is.
I don't remember how this is. One, two, or three depends on whether they were killed in battle, whether they were wounded in battle, or whether they died during peacetime.
Yeah.
And it's kind of an unofficial thing. Yeah.
Yeah, but the sculptors all seem to do it. It seems to have become a thing. And I like Tony's answer better, though. The sword sticking out, or the arrow in the back, you know?
I know. I think you should give him a prize for that.
Tony needs to get a Kiss Radio Network mug for his most creative answer of the day.
Have you ever?
Cool.
Do you have one of our mugs
that'd
yet?
That'd be great. No, I don't.
Ah, well, you're going to get one now. So we'll send one off to you. Hold on. We'll get Jennifer to to get that for you.
You guys have a great day. Thank
Thanks,
you.
Tony.
Thanks for calling, Tony.
That still was the best answer of the day.
Hey,
that's
I
it.
I think that I...
Yeah.
All the people, even if you don't get it right, we need to give them a mug.
And we do that occasionally. We have done that on special occasions in the past. So, but thank you, everybody, for playing. I'm sorry if we didn't get to you. We had a bunch of new callers today, which is always fun. So that's good. And we had some winners like that also. But we have to take a break. We got Victoria Spicer coming up from Horse and Country TV. We didn't have her last week because she was busy at Hickstead, and we're going to hear about her week and everything going on over there in Europe in just a minute. But first, we have to take a break for our title sponsor of the day, and that is Back on Track Products.
Listeners have been asking why Back on Track products work and what is the science behind them. Well, they have evolved from a combination of ancient Chinese wisdom and modern science, as well as skilled textile production. This result is a polyester polypropylene fabric with a ceramic powder that's melted into the fabric's very own weave. The ceramic particles reflect body heat as an infrared wave, a form of energy with a highly documented pain-relieving effect. This reflected heat helps to ease inflammation, reduce muscle pain, and increase blood circulation. Back on Track products can be used to warm up your horse's muscles before exercise, thus reducing the risk of strains or injury. Most importantly, the product's dual capacity to prevent injury as well as ease and expedite the recovery of already present injuries is what makes Back on Track products so unique. I hope that helps as to why their products are so effective. Visit them at backontrackproducts.com. That's backontrackproducts.com.
Wendy, I know you use Back on Track products for your horses and you, right?
Yes, I started using them when some friends of mine, actually, I had hurt my back, floating teeth, and they gave me one of those back support things, and they really work great. I now use it all the time when I'm working, and I use the sheets on my horses, and I also use the wraps.
Yeah, we want to get one of the mesh sheets for our pony, actually, because yesterday when I was out brushing him and stuff, we were giving him a little massage on his back, and it was amazing how sore and, you know, different parts of his back were for a pony that's never really had anything done with him other than starvation.
Yeah.
You know, it was really surprising how much of that was sore, and I think with a Back on Track sheet would really help him out.
Well, you know, a lot of that pain that you could be feeling in his back, too, is... you know, the bladder meridian runs along the back.
Yep.
And also, so that's the Chinese medicine way we explain it. In the, conventional way to explain it, all of his spinal nerves come out from in between his vertebrae there, and they don't just innervate the muscles, they also innervate the organs. And he's had so much stress on his body that, you know, you could be picking up some acupressure points. Because his organs have been so compromised.
Ah, okay. You know? Got it. So it doesn't necessarily always have to do with the muscles in the back being, you know, the problem.
Yeah, like, of course, you're going to get some local reaction, but then you could be picking up some distant actions of the meridian, of the bladder meridian itself.
Huh. Interesting. See, that's why we love talking to Wendy. She's got all the answers. But now it is time to talk to someone else, and that is the lovely Victoria from all the way from England.
Now it's time for the European Report with Horse and Country TV.
Well, hi, Victoria.
Hello, how are you both?
We're good. We missed you last week.
Oh, I missed you too.
No, you didn't.
Unfortunately,
you were busy.
I was quite busy. I was running one of the biggest horse shows in the world. It was quite a busy week.
Yes, and how did that go? I mean, you were over there at Hickstead, right?
I was, yes. My other job when I'm not at Horse and Country is manning the press office there. So it started on Tuesday and then continued until Sunday. So I haven't had much sleep and I'm still catching up.
Well, we thank you for joining us today because I was excited to hear how that went. You know, tell us about what is Hickstead? What is the show? You know, what disciplines, that kind of thing?
Well, Hickstead is the actual showground itself, and it was founded in the 1960s as Britain's first permanent British show jumping venue. And it's grown, and obviously we have the Derby meeting in June, which is world famous. And this show is the Longines Royal International Horse Show, and it's, I think, one of the oldest horse shows in the world. It's been around for over 100 years. And it's been held at Hickstead since 1992. And so it started off focusing on showing and show jumping, but it has grown. And now we have dressage at Hickstead running currently as well. So it's a pretty big show. But the main things up at the All England Jumping Course are the show jumping and the showing.
Now, there was dressage there. Tell us, what were the results of that? Was it a Nations Cup event?
There was, and it was the first of this new Pioneer series of the SEI Nations Cup dressage, and we had a team of Carl Hester, who everybody knows from our Olympic glory, but he was actually meant to be on the team with Laura Bechtel-Schemer, but she withdrew to concentrate on the Europeans. So it was Carl Hester and three of our up-and-coming riders. And they still won. So it's quite nice that we don't need the Charlotte and Laura factor to get us to gold medals. But just our kind of next up-and-coming star riders were there instead. And we still managed to beat everybody. And what was quite nice is I was very inside, and the two shows were run concurrently, but not under the same umbrella. But I'm pretty sure the Americans came second and so beat the Germans and the Dutch.
Wow, that's good to know.
Yeah.
We like that.
So, I mean, I think if you'd said to people, you know, 5-10 years ago, they didn't have an
Oop, you're cutting out on us, Victoria.
Ah, I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
There you go. That's better. Yep.
I think if anybody had said to us 5-10 years ago that we'd have a Nations Cup competition and it would be Britain and America at the top and Germany and Holland further down, I don't think anybody would have believed us.
No, and I still sort of don't. But you know what? We were second to your second tier team.
Yes, indeed. And we did, Charlotte Dujardin was there, but she wasn't on the Nations Cup team. Again, I presume she's just concentrating on the Europeans. But she competed in the individual class, and she was top by a long way, as usual. So she really is quite a remarkable young lady.
Yeah, but her coach, Carl, was there to make up the ground.
He was.
I love your Indeed. Articles, too. Wendy, I love their articles. So I'm on horseandcountry.tv, and it's Dressage Stars Do the Double at Hickstead is the name of the article. And the first, they have little headlines, and the top headline is Hot as Hell. I like Horse and Country TV because I like how you guys write. Hot as hell. Just say it the way it is. We're good. That's funny. And now, also, there's a horse by the name of Pearly King.
Yes, now, it's what, as I was saying, show jumping is a huge part of the show, but we also have showing classes, and it's a huge discipline over here in Britain, and it's probably the biggest sport in terms of spectator numbers in equestrianism in the UK. And so this show, you have qualifiers all around the country. So literally, by the time you get to Hickstead, this is the creme de la creme. And you've got Hickstead in July and then Horse of the Year show in October. And those are the two, basically. It's basically the Olympics of showing in Britain. You know, that's the one they all want to qualify for. So throughout the week, you have different classes from ranging from Arabs to hunters to hacks,
And on the final day, all the champions come in for one champion of champions, basically the supreme horse title. So not only are you the best in the country, you're the best of all the champions from all the other breeds. It's quite a big deal. And all the champions came in. And normally the judge will ride each horse in a showing class. But in the final judging, the riders keep on the horses and they have to do an individual party piece. And so you get them doing some really funny things, like one rider collected a glass of champagne and cantered around with it. And another rider, the one that went on to win, his rider dismounted on one side of the horse and walked around him, and he stood rock still and then got on him again. So it's all about showcasing how well behaved they are and how elegant and easy they are to ride. And so, yes, Pearly King was crowned champion of champions in the horses.
What kind of horse
was it? That's my favorite class. I love that in your European shows. We need those in America.
it's such a huge thing. And every time I hear screaming and cheering outside, it's always a showing class that's coming to its end. And,
right.
And people are so passionate about it. But what was amazing in this Champion of Championships is, two horses ended up finishing on the same score, and you see the judges holding up their scoreboard, so it's much more exciting. And I had people coming in saying that they hadn't liked showing before, but it really converted them. It was just such a brilliant championship. So Pearly King is a show hack. So imagine the kind of ladies and gentlemen of London trotting around Hyde Park in central London on very beautifully behaved, very fine horses, and that's a show hack.
My favorite part of that class too is when they have to do the gallop. They have to do their front gallop. That's so exciting. Glenn, this is why they have big spectators at these classes, and we don't have it for like the flat class at the hunter shows, because they ask them to gallop and these people sit down and they gallop around the arena. It's so exciting.
They do indeed. And often a horse will win the championship because of his gallop and because of how obediently he comes back to a walk afterwards. And so it really makes a big difference, and it gets the spectators going.
Yeah.
Wow. That's terrific. Yeah. I keep saying to everybody over here, you need to make these horse shows more fun. We'll get spectators if they're fun to watch. That's all it takes. And I believe there's a lot of people over here who would like to ride in fun classes too. So, anyway, off my soapbox. Hey, it looks like Jock Pageant was at it again. He's done pretty well this year in eventing over there in England. And it looks like the New Zealander did it again, huh?
Yeah, he won the British Open, which is held at Gatcombe, which is the home of Princess Anne, mother of Zara Phillips, of course. So it's quite a prestigious event. And yes, again, he was topping the bill.
He's the one, it was a German, the last couple of years, and now we're looking at a New Zealander. William Fox Pitt's going to be looking down at him soon.
Indeed. I mean, between Jock Paget and Andrew Nicholson, New Zealand is becoming the country to watch. So, again, quite relieved that they won't be taking part in the European Championships this month. So hopefully they can't come and win everything there.
Well, you guys can't have it all. You got dressage, right? You can't have it all.
Well, I think Germany has suddenly got, it's kind of like there's been a swap. It used to be that Britain were always the winners in eventing and Germany always won the dressage. And I think we've done a little subtle swap, because now Michael Jung has to win everything in eventing. So, I'm not sure what's happened.
Yeah. Do you notice she didn't mention Americans in any of that? So let's just continue.
No.
Hey, we talked about this.
You'll have your turn again.
Yeah, someday. Hey, we talked about this on Monday, on Monday's show, and we spent some time on this because it was a wild thing, and that was the horse and rider crash. And if you missed it, it's been all over Facebook. I mean, it's been everywhere. You guys have an article about it now. It's the rider who was, you explain it, what this rider was doing and what happened.
So she was basically competing at a country show or a country fair, and it was a speed class, and she ended up going too fast and she was heading towards the edge of the arena and couldn't pull up in time. And actually crashed through the rope at the edge of the arena into a car, and then the horse came off the car and knocked into a baby's buggy, and luckily nobody was seriously injured, but it's caused an absolute storm on social media. And we post, you know, we got the photos and thought, you know, people have wanted to read this, and loads and loads of people were on our site yesterday reading this story, but also people are kind of pointing the finger at people and saying, you know, it's the rider's fault for not having control, or it's the parents' fault for leaving their child next to the arena, or it's the show's fault for not having, you know, a secure fence. And I just think it's just one of these terrible accidents that sometimes people go wrong. And if anything, I would say it's quite dangerous to sit yourself down right next to an arena, because horses aren't, you know, they're flight creatures, and they're big and strong and unpredictable. And the fact is, it's not been the first time it's happened. You know, we've had race horses jumping into the crowd. We had that famous time at badminton, I think, or Burley, one of the four stars, when one of the horses jumped into the crowd. And you have to be aware as a spectator that things can go wrong, and your best, if you're going to stand next to the rope, that's fine, but if you see a horse coming towards you, you want to be able to get back at speed.
Car races, hockey matches, car race, there have been cars that are, you know, they don't have a mind of their own and they go into the stands, you know, and, you know, hockey matches, you go to a hockey match long enough your entire life, you might get a puck in the face. So, you know, it's,
exactly.
You know, that kind of stuff does happen. And I'm sure through the pictures, we're not seeing the whole story either. We're seeing the pictures, you know, we're seeing a piece of what actually happened that day.
Exactly. And I just think it's really fortunate that nobody was hurt, and that's the thing. But they are quite remarkable pictures. And if anything, I think if I had a very big flash 4x4 car, I wouldn't park it right next to a racer. because you don't really want to get hoof marks on your bonnet. So
now, yeah, nobody was hurt, right? Nobody, the baby, the rider, the horse.
No, apparently everybody walked away, but a lot of sympathy has been there for the rider, because it's not much fun to have, it's never fun falling off or crashing through an arena, and to be judged by the entire world of social media, I think, right, is a little bit tough for her. But remarkable images and very dramatic pictures of an event that could have gone badly wrong, but fortunately for everybody, it didn't.
Not to mention, it's never fun to land on a Land Rover.
No, definitely not.
I think the car probably took the worst of this one. what else do you got over there?
We'll do head over to the video section of our website. So we've been uploading loads from Hickstead, and yesterday we posted Carl Hester's winning freestyle test. So that's definitely worth watching. It was very popular yesterday. And we're still always looking for videos and photos from riders around the world. And we've got a new gallery at the moment called Out for a Ride. And if you just want to have a little look and see what horse riding in Britain looks like, and you get to see some of the beach rides and forests and the hacks that people ride out on, and it's quite interesting. And if you want to upload your pictures so that we can see American riding in return, that would be great.
I love the picture. I'm on there right now, and it's called Morning Ride on a Beach, and it's just pretty much a silhouette of the rider going out on the beach, and it is just a beautiful picture. I really like that. I'm going to book.
Yeah, there's some lovely ones. And there's a lovely one of a dressage horse doing Piaf or Passage or something on the beach. And it's just nice to see competition horses getting out and enjoying the countryside as well.
And can I get on my soapbox? You have one, Georgia Hayes and Seamus is out riding in the surf. And you had a tragedy there last week that we didn't talk about here on the show, where somebody was out riding in the surf. It was Great Britain someplace, I think. They were out riding in the surf, and the horse just basically dumped the rider and went out to sea and drowned. So it's something that you have
indeed
to be aware of.
Apparently, this story was produced while I was down at Hickstead, but apparently horses find it really hard to turn in when they're swimming, that they tend to swim in straight lines, so they wouldn't think to just turn back on themselves. And I think people should just be really careful about going too far into the sea and maybe seek advice if you're not experienced.
Now, Wendy, you're a vet. I heard that horses you know, it's not natural for horses to swim, yet they seem to do it so well.
Well, it is not natural for them to swim, but one of the things that helps them is their cecum, which is a blind-ended sac part of their gut where they metabolize hay. And that usually fills with gas. It's kind of similar to a rumen in a cow. So they do have a lot of gas there that helps them with buoyancy.
I need
that's
that. Because I tend to sink. Yeah. I need a cecum because that would
you
help
do,
me.
You need a cecum.
I need something to help me
eat
metabolize
more hay.
Then. Yeah, I guess that's it. Well, this has been fun.
On that note.
Yes, that's right. This has been fun, Victoria. Thank you so much for stopping by again. We really appreciate it. Of course, it's horseandcountry.tv. Thanks, Victoria.
My pleasure.
All right,
Thank you.
To you again. It's always fun to have Victoria on the show. She's always delightful and brings us all the news out of England that's fit to talk about. And, you know, I was thinking about, you know, that rider crashing in and, you know, all the social media stuff. How many times, and I know you have, how many times have we all gone to polo matches and we park right? I always wonder why more one balls and two horses don't end up, you know, in the tailgaters along a polo match.
I know. Well, usually everybody's so drunk that you're not even watching to see if the balls are coming in.
That's
so
true.
Probably it happens a lot more, but we just don't remember it.
Could be the case. All right, let's take
That's
a break
cool.
for our song for the day. And that'll come right after this product of the week from Equestrian Collection. Well, howdy, Glenn here with the Horse Radio Network, and I am with Debbie from Equestrian Collections with the Equestrian Collections Product of the Week.
My friends and I were talking on one of our Facebook threads last year about the scientific studies that have been coming out saying that zebra stripes tend to repel flies. And they've done some kind of thing with zebras to find that out. It has something to do with heat and also the way the flies can see. So what do you know? Bingo bongo. We come out with the Buccus Buzz Off Fly Sheet, and it is in a zebra stripe. It will repel the flies because of the color. And I've heard really good things about this. This particular sheet also comes with a belly band, which will protect the underside. It comes with a neck piece, and you can buy the separate fly mask if you want the whole zebra look. Everything I've heard about this is that it's really working. It's a little bit pricey, but I think it will probably be the last one that you need.
Huh. It does look like a zebra out there in your field.
Yes, and with my black and white gypsy, you can just imagine.
Oh, geez.
The flies would be so confused.
Yeah, they'd be like, all right, I'm giving up. I'm out of here. Well, that's interesting that it actually does work. I have also read the same thing. And I think, you know, part of it was the alternating stripes.
Yes.
You know, the black and white is what helps do it. It's not the one or the other. Interesting.
Right.
Very interesting.
It confuses because of the way their eyes are, the way they see multiple things everywhere, and also how they know that, I don't know. And also, they say that the black, because it sucks in the heat and the white repels it, that the flies are don't feel comfortable near that heat variation. So, you know, how they are in the shade, but in the sun, but not in the shade, that sort of thing. It's supposed to confuse them. So I've heard good things. I'd say try it.
All right. It's the Buccus, B-U-C-A-S, Buzz Off Fly Sheet. You can find it at equestriancollections.com. Just search for B-U-C-A-S.
So blue, you're climbing the walls of your pink bedroom. Feels like the world's leaving you behind. But girl, I got good news. There's a storybook ending. It's waiting for you. Hey. should see what I do. You know it ain't nothing we ain't all been through. I cried those tears once upon a time. Yeah, I wore no shoes. Let our sister just listen. Your wish is gonna come true.
That was Settle Down Cinderella, and that song is by Patty Hall. You can find all of her music at pattyhall.com. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenn the Geek, here with Dr. Wendy Ying of the Driving Radio Show, and Coach Jen is over in the producer chair. We appreciate you being here on this fine Wednesday with us today. It's finally gotten hot here in Florida. All the rest of you have had the hot, and now we've had beautiful summer up to this point, and now it's finally getting to be like Florida, 98 degrees and humid. I think the last couple days have been hotter than they have been. Don't you think, Wendy? It's finally Florida.
Oh, yeah.
Florida summer now.
It's so hot. I've been forced to actually clean my house. You know, I never clean my house.
Cleaning your house.
Oh,
no,
man.
I always say, oh, I can't. I don't have time to clean my house. I have to go to the barn. And now it's so hot, my horses are like, forget it. We're standing behind the fan. Go clean the house.
Jennifer, what is coming up for the prizes on Really Bad Ads this Friday? Jamie will be back, by the way, on Friday. She headed home from Georgia, I think, yesterday. So she'll be back on Friday to do Really Bad Ads with us.
This week's Really Bad Ads prizes to be awarded to the two brave listeners who submitted the really best of the worst ads. First off, a Grooming Essentials tote from horsegroomingsolutions.com. This Horse Grooming Essentials tote is filled with great products to keep your horse's coat in tip-top shape every day. Things like Silverado Detangler, Healthy Hair Care Moisturizer, my personal favorite, Healthy Hair Care Derma Clean Shampoo, which your pony needs, by the way, Glenn.
Yes.
Healthy Hair Care Sunflower Sunscreen, which we could use too, and Silverado Coat Care Hair Polish, good for his tail. I'm going to win this for us.
Yeah, so we need to win this. I'm going to go onto Craigslist today and submit some ads over to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com.
You always find good ones.
All of that from horsegroomingsolutions.com.
That's a good
and
prize.
And also on this week's prize list, Dr. Rose's Remedies gift pack. You got it. It's the Dr. Rose's Skin Treatment and Salve and Spray are 100% all-natural products. They are anti-inflammatory, antibacterial, antiviral, and antifungal. Dr. Rose's are made with all human-grade ingredients and are safe and effective for the treatment of scratches, abrasions, cuts, and scrapes on horses, dogs, and cats. Also works really well on fire ant bites. Ask for Dr. Rose's at your local tack and feed supplier, or you can visit them online at drrosesremedies.com.
Thank you, Jennifer. Some great prizes. If you want to submit your really crappy ads to for really bad ads on Friday, send them to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com and put really bad ads in the subject line. And I know a lot of you have submitted and haven't heard your ads yet. Keep listening. We'll get them in. They're not necessarily in the first week. We have a lot of ads being submitted because of all the terrific prizes that we have. So keep sending them in. Keep looking for them. It's not hard. It takes you, 2 minutes to find a bad ad on Craigslist. Yeah, that's about all it'll take. Yep. So, Wendy, I also want to remind everybody that Wendy is host of the Driving Radio Show. We had a couple drivers call in and play the wheel today. That was exciting. So head on over to drivingradioshow.com to take a look if you want to hear more of Wendy every week. We had a great show this week where we talked to Minnie Sarah about her minis and, you know, what she does with them, which is some amazing things. And it really made me want to buy a gun. Let's just put it that way. I want to go buy a gun. And I want to use your horse as the one I tested on, okay?
We'll have fun with that, guys.
And you have to go listen to the show to know exactly what we're talking about. It is time for this.
It's time for the weekly health report from horse.com. Fantastic information and their attempt to ruin Glenn's lunch every week.
That's right. It is time for the horse.com and their weekly horse health report. And with us is Michelle Anderson, digital editor of the horse.com. And Michelle, we have so many people listening to the show right now. I'm getting you. Say hello.
Yep.
Yes.
Good morning, Woo! Glenn.
Got the right one.
It's me.
I know your phone number now. So.
Oh, good. Oh, so you're ready for me, huh?
I'm ready. Yes, we're ready to go. Now, we're talking about, what exactly are we talking about today? I got the email, but I still wasn't quite sure.
Okay, so I was at this ISIS conference that we talked about last weekend. It was in Delaware, right on the border with Pennsylvania. We spent some time at New Bolton Center at University of Pennsylvania, and there we got to see the semi-feral herd of ponies that Dr. Sue McDonald's been researching for the past 20 years, and it was fascinating.
So they actually have them there at New Bolton Center?
Mm-hmm. Yep, they have a big pasture full of little ponies that, Sue will tell us more about it. Dr. McDonald, are you with us?
How are you?
Good morning.
Oh, are you
Hello?
There, Dr. McDonald?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, good.
I'm here at New Bolton Center.
Good. I can't even explain these ponies, so I'm just going to start asking you questions, and you can tell us all about them. First off, let's start by having you tell everyone a little bit about what you do at New Bolton, because you're not a vet. You are a PhD who does research in behavior and helps with behavior in the vet school. So tell us a little bit about that.
Right. I started here in the early 1980s as a graduate student studying reproductive behavior with a focus in stallions and have never left. So I've filled many positions here in terms of teaching and research and clinical behavior, both reproductive behavior, so stallions with breeding difficulties, mares with reproduction-related performance problems, all sorts of clinical problems like that, as well as general behavior complaints or issues where it's not quite clear. Veterinarians are not able to quite figure out why there's been a behavior change, and they suspect that it may have a physical problem underlying. So a behaviorist can be very helpful in looking at the behavior and advising on whether it's a learned problem or a simple management behavior problem, or whether they should keep looking for an underlying physical problem.
Let me clarify one thing. So that means that you were a doctoral student, and then all of a sudden your time was up, and they all looked around and said, "She's still here, and she won't leave. Let's get her ponies. That'll keep her busy for 20 years."
No, that's not exactly how it happened.
Just checking. All right. Sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
You did start out with just a couple of these ponies.
Well, my research in sexual behavior dysfunction actually led to many years of work for the National Institutes of Health using the stallion as a model for reproductive behavior in men. And so I had accumulated many ponies as research subjects for study of the physiology and pharmacology of all aspects of reproductive physiology in men. And that led into some questions that arose from some young students about the social behavior and interaction of horses under natural conditions, which the only way we could answer them was to actually create a small, which was only supposed to be a short-term project. That was in 1994. We turned out 13 males and 13 females to let them organize and breed under their own, as they wish, without any interruption or any help from us. And so that's how the herd actually started. And at that point, I got very fascinated with what we could learn from looking at horses living under natural social conditions every day of the year. There'd been quite a few studies where people went out to look at herds of horses, but they were limited by, you know, the geography and the climate to maybe looking at them for a couple weeks at a time here and there, rather than to have long-term histories and knowing the parentage and how things went long-term. So that's what's kept us going for 20 years.
So
where
how
did these
many
ponies come from? Like, were they already feral ponies, or?
No, the original 26 animals were mostly purchased from a local stock auction here, where we were careful to get them from different parts of the country, hoping that they had no relatedness, so that we would start out with as much genetic diversity as possible. And most of them, to us, appeared to be ponies that had been bred but never handled, you know, young animals that hadn't really had any introduction to domestic, but of course they came from domestic sources. So in this area at that time, there were quite a few people who would have backyard ponies. They'd have accidental offspring and not do much with them and send them to the meat auction here when they no longer could handle them, and so we took them from there. So some of them were fairly wild in our estimation.
So now, how many ponies has that left you with today?
Well, of course, we've had to have population control, because if you do the numbers, and they're very fertile, every mare has a full beginning at age 2, so most of them have pregnant before their first birthday and foal before their second birthday, and they have a foal then consistent with breeding on foal heat every year thereafter. So if you do the math, we would have thousands by now, but we take out some each year, and we now have, we're at our maximum carrying capacity of just over 100.
Okay. And within those 100, how much space do they have?
They have approximately 35 to 40 acres of very good Chester County pasture, and they average 300 to 400 pounds. They're small Shetland-type ponies, so in good years, for example, this year, which is a nice wet year, that grass will stay in good shape through the entire season, and then we give them grass hay that we spread out strategically to, so as not to disturb their social behavior. We feed in the winter the same sort of grass forage that they're eating during the growing season.
And so within that herd, how many groups do you have?
Right now we have 11 distinct groups and a couple new harem groups forming. It's the time of the year where new harem groups form. So, and there's a bit of a transition time where they kind of come and go from their natal band, but we'll probably in the fall settle out with 12 or 13 distinct groups. So that would be 10 harem groups, and we right now have what looks like are going to be 2 bachelor bands that are more or less cooperative when they need to be, but more or less separate when things are quiet.
Watching the ponies, and they gave us a good show because they came right up to the fence while our group was there. And so we got to see all of them in action. But it reminded me of watching bees in a hive. Like, it was just nonstop action. Is that what they're like all the time?
Yes, they were actually a little bit sedate that day. It was a very hot afternoon, and so while they were initially inspired by all of our activity, they don't often have a couple tour buses and someone with a microphone, so that was their initial activity was probably enhanced by that. But then it was generally quite quiet because it was so hot, and but they move a lot. That's one of the great findings we've had from this herd, is that they move as much as 100 miles a day. That would be mares, foals, and stallions at their busiest time of the year. And that's just their eating behavior and their social interaction. So when you have stallions and mares and youngsters, it keeps the activity going.
I have to tell you, Dr. McDonald, I went riding this weekend up in the mountains, and after about 7 miles, my big quarter horse was very tired. And I was like, dude, if these ponies can cover 100 miles a day, you can cover 10. You're going to make it. But it's definitely changed my perception on how much activity they really do need after seeing those little ponies going all the time, because mine just stand out there and eat and exercise, you know, a few times a week. But so with the ponies, you know, they came up to us and they were interested in people watching them. So what does semi-feral mean? Because feral sounds, you know, wild to me.
Right. The term feral just means that animals that were of stock that was at one time domestic and now running free, which is all the remaining horses around the world. There are no truly wild horses that have never, that none of their ancestors were ever domestic. And so these ponies are feral, but they are contained and somewhat managed. So the term that behavioral biologists use for herds of animals like that or groups of animals is semi-feral, meaning we keep them as undisturbed as possible, but they are contained, and they're, for example, these animals are supplemental fed over the winter just because they're not free to go on to greener pasture, to migrate to greener pastures, so we have to supplement them with some grass hay.
Yeah. So do they receive any additional care?
They have some basic required vaccinations. Although, very interestingly, some of the vaccinations we have not proceeded onward with because, for example, West Nile virus moved into this area. And one thing that was very conspicuous about this herd is while our domestic horses in the area were succumbing to West Nile virus and we were seeing cases in the hospital, that in spite of 24/7 exposure to mosquitoes with West Nile virus, they were not becoming sick. And the question came up, should we vaccinate them? And I said, well, let's first take their titers and see where they are. And, of course, they had what are the amazing natural titers. When you get exposed naturally, you get very nice high titers. And so instead of vaccinating them now, we just follow the titers spring and fall. So they're, in essence, a sentinel herd for the amount of virus there is in the area that horses are being exposed to. But they otherwise get Eastern, Western encephalomyelitis vaccinations, tetanus and rabies. When they leave the herd, they get a Coggins test. We have very minimal parasite load in the herd, so we've gone to strategic deworming, and we rarely do they have any signs of parasites that would require deworming. They don't need teeth care or hoof care. We monitor that. We study that. But they do very well. When they're foraging off the ground, their teeth are in the proper orientation while they're chewing, and they don't have the problems that our domestic horses have when we feed them different types of forages and feed them up off the ground. They naturally wear their hooves and go through a natural trimming cycle. So they don't need hoof or dental care.
Do they clean their own paddock?
Anything else I missed?
Do they clean their own paddock? Do they clean their own paddock, their own field? Just asking.
Well, we don't seem to. Mother Nature seems to take care of that. In this environment, we seem to have enough precipitation that we don't get a really, an overload of fecal material that worries us. They use natural windbreaks and a natural shelter. Depending on the weather conditions, they're standing in different places at different times so that you don't get, like you would if you had sheds, where they're standing in one place and getting an accumulation and that the substrate gets worrisome. So the substrate at any time, you could sit down and have a picnic just about anywhere and not worry that you're sitting in fecal material. We do get stud piles where the stallions have their little, where they defecate on one another's defecation and there's an accumulation and every stallion who passes stops and investigates and adds to the pile. But other than that, just about anywhere you could lay your picnic cloth down and open a bottle of wine and
feel free that you aren't sitting in a mess. I'm a horse husband, so you know what all of that just meant to me is, Jennifer, I don't have to clean the pack anymore. That's what that means. I'm off the hook.
That is not what that
Dr.
means.
Dr. McDonald just said,
gonna,
I don't have
I'm
to do it.
I'm going to jump in for Jennifer. No, it means that you need a semi-feral herd of ponies on 40 acres running around. So you've mentioned, Dr. McDonald, some of the research that you've done on them. What kind of contributions have they offered the domestic horse?
Well, probably, I'm a reproductive behavior specialist, so probably the thing that stands out most for me is that it's really improved our understanding of reproductive behavior and the effect that males have on other males, the harem and bachelor effect, that's actually been embraced by the more progressive, even in the thoroughbred industry, where they need to still do natural covers, and so they require sustained libido of breeding stallions. The effects that we've been able to demonstrate of housing and exposure to mares to enhance their breeding potential and their fertility has probably been the greatest overall contribution in my mind. But there's just so many contributions they make here locally with our vet students who can see how healthy the animals are and all the little things that get people thinking about how we could better manage horses under domestic conditions so as to keep them healthier, number one, more fertile, free of diseases, and a much better welfare. And it doesn't require that you have full natural social conditions, but you can often organize your farm in a way that kind of compromises, a nice compromise on efficiency of handling them and ease of handling them with providing them with the best social environment.
Yeah. And one thing that really fascinated me, and I live in the desert, so I don't see grass all that often irrigated, but how green and lush your grass is there in Pennsylvania, but that the ponies don't have a history of laminitis, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, and it's even more fascinating because this particular breed of small Shetland-type ponies are probably, most people would make a case that they are the greatest, of all the breeds, they are at the greatest risk of developing laminitis. And in fact, when they leave this herd, it's very sad because we have difficulty placing them with people who can keep them from having foundering within a year or two of leaving here. So I think having grown up under these conditions may even make them at greater risk. But we've not had any laminitis in the herd in all those years, and so it's just very conspicuously important that we look at all the factors that would protect these animals by being under these conditions.
Yeah. And so is there anything about the ponies that has surprised you as a researcher?
Oh, every day is a surprise. And one of the things, we when we first started, and I thought this would go for a couple years, and then after a couple years I had so many new insights into horse behavior, and I thought that, this is this is how it is, and this, you know, you come up with, wow, I never realized this, and it's always this way. And then the next year, you would find an exception to that. And so that's one of the inspirations for keeping it going, because while we're building on the knowledge and getting more and more confident in our observations that they hold true in other herds and that sort of thing, then sure enough, up comes an exception, which jogs your thinking again. So, yeah, every day is a surprise. And one great surprise that I'll share with you is how much they seem to communicate one with the other, even in events that are quite rare. For example, occasionally, we don't have many predators that would challenge the herd, but occasionally a domestic dog finds its way into the enclosure. And our fencing is such that they can sometimes find a little opening under the fencing and get in, but then they move on, and when they want to leave, they can't find another opening to get out. So under those conditions, it's really interesting how all the stallions will work together, the bachelors and the harem stallions, who generally don't like each other, don't seem to like each other very much. They will all collaborate in the way like you might have seen working dogs collaborate, and they will all go and help take care of getting this dog out of the enclosure. I feel really bad for the dog because you feel like it's going to be, you know, pushed through the wire fence like a cheese slicer, but they will all get in formation, almost like a military formation, and double barrel kick towards the dog. And, you know, it's such a remarkable thing. And on the same lines, they will, another very surprising thing of stallions was how much parenting behavior they do, and how when the youngsters start wandering away from home in play groups, as they often do at about 4 or 5 months of age, where different foals from different harem groups will go out and sort of play, often a stallion, in fact, a stallion and harem stallions will take turns being the designated babysitter for the kindergarten, so to speak. And so seeing paternal behavior in stallions has been quite shocking at first, and it continues to surprise us and the students when they see it. They had no idea that stallions would be the primary parent, even though the foals still run home for a suck now and then. The stallion is the main parent.
And where?
That's fascinating. These ponies are so fascinating.
Is there somewhere online where we can follow them, or that you have more information on them?
We have a Behavior Lab website. If you just Google horse behavior, PEN, P-E-N-N, short for University of Pennsylvania, you should be able to get to our website, and we have our scientific publications posted and a few other tidbits. And also the Horse Magazine, I write a column for them answering questions that from the public every month, or mostly every month. And if you look in their archives, many of the questions we find that we have comments concerning the natural horse behavior that help us answer those questions. So that's another good way to follow.
Very good. Well, thank you, Michelle, for bringing this to us today. Of course, Michelle is from thehorse.com. We really appreciate you being here every week, and what a fascinating topic, and you know how I love ponies, so...
they're just like... The biggest question I got when I got back and started talking to my friends about the ponies is, how do I get a job doing that? How do I set a pony?
At times in the past, I have owned a semi-feral herd of ponies, much to my wife's dismay. So thank you, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Dr. McCall.
Bye-bye.
All right. Right, dear?
Whatever you say.
All right, let's go on here. We have a few minutes left, and if we go a little over, I don't care, because it's an important topic. Jennifer started something on our Horses in the Morning Facebook page yesterday that seemed to take off and be shared to almost tens of thousands of people now. And it was an article written by Roy Exum, and it was in the paper down in Tennessee. And so tell us about the story.
All right, so here's the scoop. Roy Exum has been an advocate for strengthening the Anti-Soaring Act for some time, and it is currently being tossed about on Capitol Hill. They're trying to make an effort to
strengthen the horse soaring act, which has been around for some 40 years and has not managed to convict anyone but one human being in 40 years, despite the fact that there have been hundreds, if not thousands, of people charged with soaring their horses. And this is specifically in the Tennessee walking horse business. There is a specific group within the Tennessee walking horse breeds who shows their animals in what is called big lick classes, or performance classes is the more politically correct term. And those are the ones that we've all seen that when they move, they wear giant overweighted shoes in their front feet so that their front feet fly up in the air and out in front. And consequently, they overload the hindquarters, and the hindquarters shuffle along and look a lot like a German Shepherd with hip dysplasia. That's kind of how they move in the back. So maybe they have hip dysplasia, maybe they don't. I don't know. But that's where this all stems from.
And they play terrible music. Annual... I'm just saying.
Yeah, irregardless of the terrible music. They do play terrible music. The live organ music. Their annual celebration show, which is their championship, takes place in Shelbyville, Tennessee each year. And that is coming up here very shortly. And Roy discovered that a local beer distributorship, because the majority of the sponsorship at this show is local because it's a local competition, even though it's worldwide, a little bit like other national shows, is working with them and sponsoring them, but they are the official beverage. So he's supplying alcoholic beverages to the show, which is a first for them. So I posted that article on the Horses in the Morning Facebook page and encouraged listeners to read the article and then post on our page, but more importantly, go to the Budweiser Facebook page and let Budweiser know that one of their local distributors is helping to support this subculture within the Tennessee walking horse industry, and it has gone crazy. Kudos to all of our listeners who went over there, and for the vast majority of them, put very sensible, logical posts up. It wasn't just people flaming Budweiser, because it isn't Budweiser Corporate or Anheuser-Busch who has created any sponsorship. It's a local distributor, but it would be nice to see Anheuser-Busch put a little pressure on this local distributorship to not support this celebration. Folks who run this celebration are very pro Big Lick. They are the ones fighting against the Soaring Act being strengthened. They're fighting to continue to allow the what they call action devices, which are chains and the like, being put on the horses' legs to encourage them to move the way they do.
You know, I guarantee I've worked for corporate entities before, and I know exactly what happened at Budweiser yesterday. Their social media manager went and contacted the PR department and said, "What is this all about? I have no idea what they're talking about." And that proceeded to go up the ladder, and now they're trying to figure out what to do about it. So I guarantee you that's about where they're at this morning, is trying to figure out what, if anything, they should do about it, or if it would just go away.
Right. Well, let's not let it go away first. Yeah. And I did take note, if you read the entire article, and we will put another link up on it on our page later today, because things disappear on Facebook, the Coca-Cola, local beverage distributor also distributes other brands. So in the article, those brands are distributed. So I also went to their Facebook pages and posted a link to said article, but those posts seem to have magically disappeared. So at least Budweiser left the posts up.
Yeah, I mean, at least Budweiser has done that. Now, the USDA, the Department of Agriculture, is supposed to be there. And they were there last year at the show, and they did cause a little bit of commotion last year at the show. So hopefully they're going to be back in force this year. But, you know, who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, it's a big political nightmare. And one of the issues they have is this particular division within the Tennessee walking horse industry supposedly brings an enormous amount of money to the local economy in Shelbyville, and also the Tennessee Walking Horse Association as a whole. But I've got some very interesting statistics that make me wonder if this is really the case. In 2007, the Shelbyville Celebration lost $67,000 at the end of the day. In 2008, the same horse show lost $139,000. in the past 6 years, the horse show has lost just under $1 million. So they continue the horse show. Where's the money coming from? They're losing money. This division can't possibly be creating a positive cash flow within the industry. Let it go, guys.
You lived in the South. Did you ever run into this, Wendy?
When I was in Kentucky, I did see some of those horses, but I've been lucky that this group tends to have their own little clique of veterinarians, so I have not had to deal. I dealt with one once, and I don't even want to talk about it on the air.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
If I ever get called out by one of these kind of people, I would just refer them to somebody else.
You know, and I do want to say that this is a group within the subset. It's not all Tennessee Walkers that have this problem.
Right. You know, because I see like trail riding Tennessee Walkers.
They're very popular. As a matter of fact, they're the most popular horse for trail riding right now in America. I mean, because they're so smooth and they're terrific horses, and not all of them have been through this torture. You know, and it is a subgroup. There's a group within the Tennessee Walker community that is as adamant against this as we are. You know, that are really pushing, and I forget the name of it. Jennifer probably come up with it, but we've had them on the air before.
FOSH.
Yes.
Friends of Sound Horses.
Yes. And they feel stronger about this and are doing everything they can to make sure it goes away. And hopefully this bill will go through Congress. It was supported by over 120 congressmen and multiple senators. And we're hoping that it goes through. It just, what the bill's going to do is put some teeth behind the bill that was already put through many years ago. And, you know, hopefully it'll allow some prosecutions here so that it just stops at this point.
Yeah.
You know, I think also as those people, we need to... Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
One of the comments I saw the other day was someone is playing the unwanted horse card within the pro Big Lick community, in that they're saying, well, if they eliminate this division, all of the horses that have been trained for this Big Lick division will become unwanted and be prone to be throwing the slaughter, which is a lot of hoo-ha.
Well, and if that's the case, it says a lot about
the trainers trained.
If that's the case, it says a lot about the owners of these horses in the first place, doesn't it? So,
what I was going to say. We as horse people need to know that, you know, we need to stand up and say this is not okay to abuse horses like this, because, you know, with all the problems with the Humane Society and people thinking, you know, going crazy about horse abuse, this is a real case of horse abuse, and we can't let this go on in our community.
You know, there are bad apples in every discipline, in every breed. We have them. We all know that there are bad apples, but when you identify a large group of bad apples, you know, we need to start with the large group of bad apples and then focus on the smaller bad apples. But, you know, we can't, and it's just, anyway. Well, thank you, Jennifer, for posting that the other day. You know, we don't get political very often. Very, very seldom do we ever get political on any of our shows. But this is one topic that all the hosts, you know, we all agree on, and it's the reason that we are not afraid to talk about it. And if any of you saw those videos from Nightline or whatever show it was last year, you would have second thoughts if you are supportive of them. But all right, so Jennifer, what's the call to action for the listeners who haven't already?
Find out who the sponsors are of the shows, and that is available via this article from Roy Exum, which I, again, will post on the Facebook page. And there are other ways to find it. It's pretty well hidden from the general public because they know what's going to happen. Find out who the sponsors are and stand up on your soapbox, but then put on your thoughtful hat and let those sponsors know how you feel about the show and why. And we need to keep pulling at the purse strings. They're trying to use alcohol sales to help prop up the profits of the show and try to make it make money. And let them know that it's not Tennessee Walking Horses that we're having issues with. It's this subset of the Big Lick, quote, training system. And let the sponsors know. And I think that's going to have a bigger effect, because I think the Tennessee Walking Horse community already is keenly aware of how the public at large feels about this system of soaring, but perhaps the corporate sponsors are not, because those corporate sponsors are frequently, the human beings are 13 layers away from the money. There are people, there are departments, there are hired subcontractors, and by the time the money gets to the Shelbyville celebration, the folks back at Budweiser, completely clueless. So just let them know.
Hey, Jennifer, can you do this today? Can you reach out to Roy Exum? And he, by the way, he writes for the Chattanoogan, and the paper down there in Chattanooga. So reach out to him today, drop him an email, and see if he's willing to come on Friday and talk to us about it. Because he seems to be the one that really, you know, has his ear to the ground and knows which way the train is going. So
he's very obviously on one side of this against touring.
More important,
he's
on our side.
But he's also very factual.
More important, he's on our side.
He's
so
also
get him
very
on.
Factual. Yeah.
All right, we'll see if we can get him on Friday. Thank you, Jennifer, for doing that. We really appreciate it. Thank you, Wendy, for joining us today on your first
Thanks for having
Wednesday.
Me here. It's so much fun.
And, of course, as I said, you can find Wendy over at drivingradioshow.com. And her website is... DrWendyYing.com. Lots of terrific stuff on there. Go check it out. If you just want to see all her pretty pictures, she's on there, too, of her driving her horses and doing fun things. So you can find those over there as well. We'll be back here on Friday for Really Bad Ads. Get your ads in to Jennifer at HorseRadioNetwork.com. Jamie should be back on Friday. I think she's back in Arizona now. Her dad has gone home from the hospital and apparently is improving, so we're glad to hear that as well. That's about it. Wear your helmets. Be safe. Bye, Wendy.
Bye, guys.
Bye, everybody.